From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a special look at Libya through the eyes of the UN Security Council. It's been 4.5 years since the United States led an aerial bombing campaign against the nation of Libya that was coordinated with terrorist attacks on the ground and led to the overthrow of Libya's Jamahiriya government. Libya has been in complete disarray ever since, a model failed state. On Wednesday, the United Nations Security Council met to hear reports on the conditions there and to try to figure out how to fix the mess that's been made.
The 7,512th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is the situation in Libya. The agenda is adopted. In accordance with Rule 37 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite the representative of Libya to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. In accordance with Rule 39 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite Mr. Bernardino Leon, Special Representative of the Secretary General and Head of the United Nations Support Mission in Libya, to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. On behalf of the Council, I welcome Mr. Leon, who is joining us today via video teleconference from Paris. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. I wish to draw the attention of the Council members to document S/2015/624, the report of the Secretary General on the United Nations Support Mission in Libya. I now give the floor to Mr. Bernardino Leon.
Thank you, Madam President, distinguished members of the Council. You have before you the Secretary General's latest report on the activities of the United Nations support mission in Libya, detailing the mission's work over the past 5 months. The report paints a mixed picture of evolving security dynamics in Libya. A year since the country's most serious outbreak of armed hostilities and a disruption to the political process, local communities in western Libya are increasingly taking the lead in ceasefire and reconciliation initiatives between different towns and cities, contributing to a marked reduction in military tensions across that part of the country and the wider Tripoli area. This is in stark contrast to security dynamics elsewhere in the country. 15 months since the start of military operations in Benghazi in the east, it is clear that the confrontations between the parties have gradually transformed into a war of trenches with no imminent end foreseen. In the interim, the status quo is exacting a heavy toll on the civilian population and on whatever remains of the city's much damaged infrastructure. Over 100,000 of Benghazi's population remain internally displaced, and 70% of health facilities in the city are either inaccessible or non-functional. The situation in the south is equally appalling. The absence of the state and of a proper functioning security apparatus has exacerbated local competition by tribal groups for power and resources, a conflict that has its roots in decades-long marginalization and neglect by central authorities. At the national level, the scale of human suffering is staggering for a country with large oil reserves and strong economic potential. According to different United Nations agencies, an estimated 1.9 million people require urgent humanitarian assistance to meet their basic health care needs. Access to food is now a major problem for some 1.2 million people, mostly in Benghazi and the east. The figure for internally displaced persons across Libya now stands around 435,000. The healthcare system is on the verge of collapse, with many hospitals across the country overcrowded and operating at severely reduced capacity, many reporting acute shortages of medicines, vaccines, and medical equipment. Power cuts are endemic in many areas of the country. Some neighborhoods, such as in Benghazi, are enduring electricity cuts almost round the clock. Close to 250,000 migrants are estimated to be in the country of transiting or transiting through, many of them facing significant protection issues, including arbitrary arrest and detention in abusive conditions, sexual abuse, forced labor, exploitation, and extortion. This year alone has seen over 2,000 migrants drown in the Mediterranean Sea, the vast majority in a desperate bid to make the sea crossing from Libya to Europe's southern shores. At the same time, the country's economy continues to contract rapidly, the result of a significant reduction in oil revenues due to falling oil prices and low oil production from Libya's oil fields. Libya's financial reserves are also being heavily depleted, in large part the result of unsustainable expenditures on non-productive items. The political institutional crisis in the country has also manifested itself in a growing competition over key financial and other sovereign institutions. Madam President, against this grim backdrop of growing hardship and misery stemming from deteriorating security and general lawlessness, widespread violations and abuses of international human rights and humanitarian law continue with impunity across the country. Armed groups from all sides continue to abduct civilians on account of their political opinions or identity, often in the hope of exchanging them in return for a ransom or for the release of fighters or other civilians taken by rival groups. Not even humanitarian aid workers have been spared. Permit me, Madam President, to use this platform to reiterate my call on all sides in the conflict to undertake the necessary steps to protect civilians from direct and indiscriminate attacks, facilitate their evacuation, and allow unimpeded and safe access to humanitarian aid. I also wish to remind all parties of their obligations to end all forms of arbitrary detention and to protect all those detained from torture or other ill treatment. While we welcome the release of some of the illegally detained persons, we continue to urge all parties to do more to complete this process as soon as possible. Madam President, when I last briefed the Council in mid-July, I spoke of ISIL or Daesh having asserted control of the strategically located city of Sirte in central Libya. That control has now been extended to more than 200 kilometers stretch of coastline east and west of Sirte. Despite an attempt by local armed groups on 11th August to dislodge the group from Sirte, Daesh fighters have regained control of the city 3 days later. Casualty figures are difficult to confirm, but witnesses report brutal revenge attacks by Daesh against their opponents. There can be no doubt that the danger posed by Daesh to Libya and to the Libyan people is real, imminent and palpable. Libyan security and military actors, as well as political stakeholders on either of the divide, are fully cognizant of the danger posed by Daesh-affiliated militants. However, they must recognize that no strategy aimed at containing, if not eliminating, the Daesh threat will be viable unless it is part of a concerted, unified and coordinated effort that brings all Libyans together under a single banner whose allegiance is to the Libyan state and to government that is inclusive and representative of all Libyans. The message to Libya's leaders is clear. There is simply no other alternative to unified and collective action if Libyans are to successfully prevent a repeat of the catastrophic advances that Daesh has made in the countries like Syria and Iraq. Madam President, since my last briefing to the Council, in which I updated the Council on the progress in the Libyan political dialogue process, I reconvened the main dialogue track for a new round of talks in Geneva between 11th and 12th August. The 2 days talks focused primarily on ways of expediting the dialogue process ahead of the critical 21st October deadline, the date by which the mandate of the House of Representatives could end according to the Constitutional Declaration. Although the General National Congress in Tripoli did not initial the main text of the Libyan political agreement along with other dialogue participants on 11th July, I am confident that their concerns can be addressed in ongoing discussions on the annexes of the agreement, including those pertaining to the formation of the Government of National Accord. Madam President, 7 months since the United Nations support mission in Libya launched the Libyan political dialogue process, I am increasingly confident that the process is finally drawing to its final stages. This has been a difficult and challenging process, but one that has proven increasingly resilient. Despite repeated attempts by spoilers on all the sides, whose narrow interests and agendas dictate against a peaceful solution to the conflict in Libya. That a majority of stakeholders have sought to engage in the different tracks has been a reassuring sign of the grassroots support that the dialogue process has gradually acquired from different segments of the Libyan population. The talks have come a long way in narrowing the trust deficit that exists among Libya's political stakeholders and in forging agreement over a roadmap that lays out a vision for bringing an immediate end to the country's political crisis and military conflict that have ravaged Libya for over a year now. Overcoming the political polarization and divisiveness in Libya will be no easy task. The magnitude of the challenges should not be underestimated, nor of the resources required to pull Libya back from the brink of economic meltdown and total collapse of state institutions. But most importantly, it will be the determination and commitment of Libyans themselves, more specifically their political leaders, which will safeguard Libya's national unity and territorial integrity and spare its people the scourge of long-term civil strife and instability. Madam President, with respect to the respective leaderships of the House of Representatives and the General National Congress, I appeal to both that they do not squander the historic and unique opportunity they have before them to be peacemakers. I call on both not to squander the hard work they have invested over the past 7 months to arrive at the point where they are today. The agreement they have negotiated may not be perfect, but it is a fair and reasonable one, in which the only winners are the Libyan people. I would also like to reiterate that the United Nations, along with the international community, will remain steadfast in its commitment and support to Libya's democratic process. Any attempt to derail the political process through undemocratic means should not be tolerated. The dialogue process remains the only credible and legitimate mechanism by which Libyans can safeguard the continuity of the democratic process in their country. Time is running out. The onus is on Libya's leaders on all sides and at all levels to make that final push towards peace. Madam President, as Libya's dialogue process enters in its final phase, I wish to thank the members of this Council for your support to my mediation efforts, and I wish to reiterate my sincere and profound gratitude and appreciation to the Libyan people and its representatives, as well as to the various member states and regional organizations that have supported the dialogue process. In particular, I wish to thank Algeria, Egypt, Germany, Italy, Morocco, Qatar, Spain, Switzerland, Turkey, Tunisia, and the United Arab Emirates, as well as the African Union, the European Union, and the League of Arab States. The collective effort and determination of the international community will be vital to articulating a clear strategy for the delivery of technical assistance. Equally important, the international community must also move quickly to present a clearly articulated strategy in support of the Libyan state and the efforts by the government of national accord to contain and eliminate the threat that groups like Daesh are posing not only to the stability of Libya, but equally to regional and international security. Thank you very much.
I thank Mr. Leon for his briefing. I now give the floor to the representative of Libya.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Shukran, Sayyidat al-Rais.
In the name of God, the Merciful, the Compassionate, thank you, Madam President. Madam President, allow me, first of all, to congratulate you for your presidency of the Security Council for the month of August. I would also like to thank Mr. Bernardino León, the Special Representative of the Secretary General, for his briefing on the Secretary General's report, and I thank him for the additional information that he has given us. It's very clear that Libya is now going through the most critical phase in its modern history. Libya is threatened in its very existence as a united, independent, and sovereign state. And this because of the greed and the whims of its children, and because of the conspiracy which is promoted by certain countries for their own purposes. And this is also due to terrorism that doesn't even believe in the existence of Libya, except as a state which finances a multinational entity. And I'm speaking about an entity where the faithful are beheaded, where the faithful are crucified, where the law of the jungle is the law which is adopted, and where governance is led by the devil. Undeniably, the report of the Secretary General submitted to this Council highlights some of the dimensions of this very gloomy picture. Despite all of this, we still hope that Libya will be saved by its own people. Recently, the Libyan people began to feel that this Libyan crisis could be settled. However, this optimism is linked to the formation of a government of national accord, a national reconciliation government. Such a government must have a minimum knowledge, including the management of state affairs. Such a government must be familiar with the rules of good governance and must also be able to communicate positively with all of the parties. But at the same time, intellectuals have doubts as to the success of forming such a government because of the lack of criteria that should be met for the selection of the members of such a government. And this is very far from public opinion. Hence, the crucial importance of the role played by the special representative of the Secretary General and of the Security Council, a very crucial role during this period, because it must direct the participants to political dialogue so that they can work, so that they can set aside the failures of the last 4 years. The ultimate objective is to choose a new leadership for the country, far from partisan and personal interests. Progress achieved in the political dialogue thus far is an undeniable success, which could lay the basis for peace and security during what is left of the transitional period before the adoption of the Constitution. However, this success can vanish because of the intransigence of a particular party which is obstructing the process, a party that we're all familiar with and which doesn't respect the future of Libya or the lives of Libyans. As long as this party has enough weapons and enough of foreign support to obstruct the consensus. And that is why Libyans are waiting for a firm position from Mr. Leon and from this council, so that they can put an end to the procrastination and futile deliberate delays which are adopted or could be adopted by a party in this dialogue. They want to achieve a government of national accord, and they want to bring together the necessary conditions so that this government can begin its work from the capital, Tripoli, as soon as possible. However, the formation of a government of national accord is not the end of this process, because it would perhaps be a government which is not better than the previous governments. But the direct work done by UNSMIL, the UN support mission in Libya, to provide support to set up state institutions and to provide advice when it comes to good governance, these are criteria which could improve the performance of such a government and would allow this government to defuse the current crisis in Libya. The Security Council must also be ready to take all of the necessary measures to help this government to control the entire Libyan territory and to fight against extremist groups, groups which would resist disarmament when the time comes. I'd like to draw your attention to the fact that all of the efforts made by the Special Representative of the Secretary General in Libya could be futile if we don't clearly define the map of terrorism in Libya, and if we don't describe the sponsors of terrorism as terrorists who provide weapons. And I say this because the content of the 81st paragraph of the Secretary General's report shows that the situation on the ground is critical. According to this paragraph, there is a ceasefire in Benghazi. Now, that town welcomes the largest terrorist force in Libya, a force which is resisting the army operations to free this town from terrorism and to guarantee the return of its citizens. Madam President, a few days ago, some described Derna as being a town which was freed from terrorism, a free city. But in fact, this town is occupied by al-Qaeda, and this has been the case since 2011. I went to Derna in January 2012. And during that visit, I noticed that public state institutions were not waving the Libyan national flag. And I believe that that is still the case. Because al-Qaeda has not changed its tactics thus far. In the course of the last 6 months, Daesh, or ISIL, has controlled Derna for about 6 months, and this with the support of al-Qaeda. And there are still differences when it comes to the interests of both entities. Al-Qaeda took over Derna, and we all know that the only difference between al-Qaeda and ISIL is the nature of their criminal activities. That's the only difference. The members of the Council should know, if they don't know already, that the scope of the danger posed by al-Qaeda in Libya goes beyond the danger which is posed by ISIL, because the ISIL terrorists are present in specific and restricted areas in Libya, while the members of al-Qaeda are in several parts of Libya and call themselves revolutionaries, rebels. Unfortunately, this terrorist entity has manipulated a great deal of young people who've joined them and who joined their fight without really knowing the reality of that entity. And I'm convinced that al-Qaeda is going to come back to the forefront, and that entity will carry out staunch resistance when it feels that it is going to be disarmed. I hope that the position of all the states will be very clear. I hope that those states are going to choose between supporting the Libyan people or supporting terrorists, regardless of the name these terrorists have. Thank you very much, Madam President.
I thank the representative of Libya for his statement. There are no more names inscribed on the list of speakers. I now invite council members to informal consultations to continue our discussion on this subject. The meeting is adjourned.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.